Goes the Dynamite. This is the Film Drunk Frotcast. Thank you so much for joining us, wherever in the world you are. We have fans all over the world, Vince.
Everywhere.
On the moon.
Under the sea.
Under the sea in the lost city of Atlantis.
Yeah, buried in the sand in the desert.
I mean, anywhere you could think of, we got listeners. My name is Ben. Again, thank you for joining us. We have super blogger Vince in the house.
Hey, he's the Mexican Predator. Look out, everybody.
I'm right here, Skype me in.
I cannot see you. You're covered in mud. Hey, where did he go?
I only can see heat shadows. Where did he go?
Hey, where did you go, S.A.? I'm looking for you. I just want to choo-choo. I'm from the jungle. Look out.
You're from space.
I'm from space, dude. Now I live in the jungle. Where did all these soldiers go?
You killed them all.
Oh, that's right.
Look in your bag of, you got a bag of skulls.
Oh, I put in their spines. I put in their spines on my chip.
What sort of food do you like?
My chip is a Chevy from space.
Space Chevy?
A space Chevy.
That's awesome. Is it like I have a hydraulics and stuff?
Oh, sure.
You guys fall into your yes and pattern.
I like that you can't even separate Mexican Predator from fake bread.
I'm not good at improv.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Yeah.
I just do one character in different voices, basically.
Basically, it's just Vince's inner monologue with a different exterior voice.
I don't have time to think of stuff in different people's brains.
Oh, sure. And of course, we have Brett live from New York.
Hi, guys.
Hey. We are missing Brendan. You know, he had important work stuff to take care of there. It was Trust Fall Wednesday. And if Brendan's not there, who's going to catch
everybody? You've got to catch the new guys because they will just straight up fall.
They'll fall. There's a lot of liability.
The trust is broken. That's something you can't repair.
You know what, Brett? There's no going back from that. Once the trust tree is...
Yeah.
Once
you cut down the trust tree, no more apples, my friend.
No. Mm. And then, you know, your insurance premiums go up. Think it's a domino effect. Slippery slope.
Really is.
Slip.
It's slipping.
Trust slip.
We got a fun show. We got Matt Ufford coming on. Which
momentarily,
will be fun.
Yeah.
Vince's former roommate.
That's right.
Former blog mate.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And we have another guest coming on.
We do. Sammy Obaid, comedian from the Bay Area. He has been all over the country, and he is coming up. I think he's over 900, but his goal is to do 1,000 consecutive nights of comedy, which sounds like a nightmare. But
as a comedian, how do you feel about that? Someone presented this to you. If I say, hey, Vince.
It kind of makes me break out in a cold sweat just thinking about it.
Like maybe a little shart, like not a big one, but just like a small, like you can't even help it.
Yeah, I just want to let one out, squeeze one out, like a sympathy poop.
You probably do an average of what, 1 to 3 nights a week, maybe?
Yeah, probably about that. Yeah, 2 nights a week, probably.
But it's just 1,000 in a row it's 2+ years, 3 years almost.
Yeah, it's intense.
It's a lot of jokes.
It's weird. You definitely do get better. Like, I know I'll never be a great comedian because I don't do it enough, but I don't feel like going to a bar, 3 hours a night, five days a week.
Well, yeah,
I do it. I do like a bunch right before a big show. By the way, Cobbs this Sunday, August 4th, 7:30. Me and Joe King and David Borey is going to host. Should be pretty good deal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I got some good new bits.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Bits? Good bits? Funny bits?
Yeah. Good. I've been trying to, trying to go to the open mics more to sort of make your material better. Last night, I got off stage. I did really well last night at this crappy little... bar up in North Beach, and it's all comics except for like the two or three hardcore drunks that are just happened to be in there on the Tuesday. And this guy comes up to me afterwards, and he's doing the thing, when you're drunk and you sort of forget the thing that you just said, so you just repeat the same things over and over.
Yeah,
I like that part.
you're funny, man. Thank you. I'm gonna walk home laughing. You're funny. Just don't let it go to your head.
Did you take his advice?
And he's like, I let it go to my head. I'm like, oh, really? Did you?
Do tell.
Yeah, and I'm sort of laughing inside. He's like, I'm a writer. I used to be a writer. I used to write stories, reviews for the SF Weekly. So at this point, it kind of freaks me out because the whole time I'm just sort of like silently laughing at him. And then he gets to the part where he's like a film critic. I'm like, holy shit, am I looking into my future right now?
That's future Vince.
And then I got too drunk. I fell into a time machine. Now I'm here watching you guys.
But seriously, bro, you're funny.
Yeah. He's like, don't let some agent dick you around because you're funny.
I was funny once.
Yeah, basically. I'm like, did you see the set that I just performed to a largely empty bar? I don't think an agent dicking me over is quite on the table yet. But
and then he puts his single finger up to your lips.
Yeah, shh, don't talk.
don't ruin this moment, man, because you're funny. I know what it's like. There's a day I was funny. I didn't have anyone giving me this advice. So you got that advice.
I did. I feel like I'm a better person for it.
From future events, too. Yeah. Which is kind of cool.
Speaking of comedy, I did want to address the you guys apparently missed the article about the Andy Kindler Adam Carolla thing.
Yeah, no, I'm not familiar. I've heard of Adam Carolla.
Right.
I have not heard of Andy Kindler.
I vaguely know who Andy Kindler is. I think he's been on like Comedy Bang Bang and that kind of stuff. Part of that.
So a fairly well-known comedian.
Like, I mean, he's well enough to give a speech at the Just for Laughs festival like 2 years in a row.
Dude.
Like I think last year he did the keynote, and this year he did something like called the state.
He hosted the keynote game.
No keynote. No, that's address.
You're supposed to say sure, man.
Sure, sure. So So this year he gave some sort of state of comedy, and he always does like sort of a roasty thing, from what I gather. But so this year, like a couple of sites picked up his. Excerpts from his speech, and
I did read about this,
and he's like,
he basically pooped on Adam Carolla.
The chick from Laughspin was like, he dispensed the sharpest stake to the heart of zinging with this. Adam Carolla is like Hitler if Hitler weren't funny, and before that he's a bigot with a capital Nazi. As always, the state of the industry leaves a lot of room for improvement, but you know Kindler is just kidding when he dismisses it all as a steaming pile of shit, except for Carolla. There's no hope of redemption for Carolla. In closing, Kindler offered this nugget of divine truth. If you're a comedian and you're not saying anything funny, you're just a racist. And so, you know, I was like trying to... And I basically had two accounts of this speech where...
So you didn't hear the actual speech?
No, because it wasn't online. The audio wasn't online.
The best way to ever understand something is to hear it third hand.
Yeah.
Or second hand.
So, like, everybody's writing like, oh, you fucking called Adam Carolla a racist, you know, this and that. And, you know, I was writing about it because... Like, I wanted to know about it, and if I want to know about it, probably other people do, which is basically my approach to my job.
At least one or two other people that care.
Yeah.
If not, like, three.
Yeah, could be three, could be seven.
Like, on the high end. If you get to double digits, you've really struck gold.
Yeah. So, you know, I wrote about it with as much knowledge as I could, with basically quoting two separate accounts and trying to make sense of it from what I knew. And basically the tone on it was... you know, I don't usually trust other people's takes on a comedy show because people always seem to write those things up where they take the sarcasm and comedy out of it.
Were the people that wrote about it there in person?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so yeah. They were at least there.
I think so. Yeah,
because
I don't know how, they wouldn't have been able to hear about it otherwise.
I do feel like with comedy in particular, a lot of it is sort of the mood of the room, and then also how you. Interpret it sort of internally as well.
Yeah.
So I do think it's, if you saw the video and audio, it would be significantly different than simply reading one person's take.
Plus, if you're a gender studies major who hates Adam Carolla as the Laughspin writer was, then yeah, you're obviously going to spin it in such a way where it sounds like, oh, Andy Kindler was honestly ripping Adam Carolla.
I think Carolla's probably going to quit tomorrow based on this takedown of him.
Yeah. And so I wrote it up, and you know, I was trying to be as fair as I could and point out that, yeah, I don't know how much kidding there was. It didn't sound like he's kidding. And then on his Twitter, he's like, also, I don't know if he's staying in character or what his deal is, but he's like, or if he honestly, I can't tell if he honestly dislikes Carolla at this point, because I wasn't there or whatever. So I tried to write it up as fairly as possible. And then Then Andy Kindler obviously like found the story.
Are you Twitter beefing?
Sorta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's it going?
So then after after I put it up, like then the full text of the speech came out, and because I was honestly trying to figure out what the context was in the first place, I tried to update the story and put like, oh, in context, it sounds much more like it was sort of, you know, part of the shtick of the speech, which makes more sense than just.
So you updated the story. Are you still Twitter beefing?
Well, I wasn't paying attention to Andy Kindler's Twitter feed today, but so then after that, he's like, you can't misreport a story, then say it's a non-story. You investigated your own mistake. Is this a gossip rag? And then it's my link. And then Andy Kindler ripped apart Colin Quinn's keynote's address. He wasn't joking. Update. In context. Hard to tell. And it's like...
It's kind of funny, actually.
Yeah, but it's like... I mean, I don't know what he's... I was just trying to be fair. Like, I don't know why I'm getting the shit instead of the people that were wrote it seriously. The people that were there physically that wrote it as if he... was calling someone a racist, which I don't think is particularly funny.
Well, I actually read your post.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of like, this is how I feel about Kroll these days. And it seemed like he was probably really ripping him, but...
It was, yeah.
Sort of, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. It was up in the air.
I didn't read the follow-up, though. But he's just trying to make jokes, man. It's just comedian on comedian crime, which, is one of our nation's big problems.
But it's like, excuse me for misinterpreting you calling someone else a racist repeatedly, like within like three levels of shtick.
I would think it's probably just another reason or ability to make a joke out of something would be my guess.
Yeah, probably.
Brett. Yeah, there. Clear your throat.
He's gonna fart sound.
Yeah, go for it.
You can't just step on it. You gotta let me actually make the sound of the fart, otherwise it loses all its power. Who the fuck cares?
Yeah, I'll go with that. I'm completely fine with that.
If he's actually beefing, then he's a shriveled up old prude. And if he's not, then you shouldn't care because he's running a shtick on you.
Ooh.
Running? I got shtick ran.
I got stuck.
I got stooped. Shtick. I got shtick stooped. Is that the proper...
And how do you... what's the,
I don't think so.
No.
Past tense of shtick.
Stuck.
I don't know.
All right. Well, so I think we cleared up that beef.
Yeah, we sure did.
So,
I don't know. I feel bad because I don't want to be the guy who's like writing up the thing where it's like, these two guys were beefing. But, if I'm curious about it, I'm going to fucking write about it. And hey, sorry for trying to give you the benefit of the doubt and understand the context.
But you did the
best you could do in a job where your entire article is about someone else might have said a thing.
Yeah.
Which isn't an enviable place to be in.
Yeah.
And might say something about content in general, that there's not enough of it, that you're like doing that. But I think you did it in the best possible way.
Yeah. I'm trying to cut through the noise, and there's only so much I can do sometimes.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I don't know how I feel about articles that are essentially like, I read another article on the internet, but I tend to think that you add enough.
That's what blogging is. Basically, I mean, there was...
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if I give enough of a shit about what someone else read somewhere and their takes on it, but you tend to add enough interest in your opinions on things. Like, you're a good enough writer to pull it off, but 80% of the people who do the same thing aren't, and I'm sure that if he's actually being... legit pissed off about this, it's very little based on you and probably a lot more based on that abstract notion of bloggers.
True. Oh yeah, I'm sure that's true. But it's basically like this story was already out there and people were talking about it and sending me links to it and were curious about it. So I gathered up all the information I could, and instead of just writing like so-and-so ripped so-and-so and said he's a huge racist, I sort of was like, that's what it sounds like. We're trying to figure out more context,
We didn't. You didn't go for the headline, like...
The BuzzFeed listicle.
Yeah.
Like, top 10 things that so-and-so said about so-and-so that might or might not be construed as potentially calling him a racist.
No, Brett, you got to go much more direct. That's how you get the clicks.
Oh,
Yeah.
God, hey, suck at the internet.
First you get a clicks, then you get a power, then you get a women.
Right?
That's blogging.
And then step four, profit.
Profit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whatever. I know I don't have the most important fucking job in the world. I'm just
doing my thing.
Like normally I would say you gotta defer to the content creator because I mean everyone else is just stacking on top. But he's not really a content creator in this point anyway. He's riffing on someone else. Like he's essentially already one removed from the actual comedy.
Yeah.
Like, a roast isn't a lot of I don't know.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of roasty jokes and.
Yeah, that's not the highest
form. I'm not big on roasts. I really think they're very funny.
I used to. I feel like they've taken a turn.
Turn for the unfunny?
Yeah. Like when it became such a thing where, like, first of all, it's funny when you have Hugh Hefner and you roast Hugh Hefner because he's like a prominent figure who's like, you know, done respectable
things.
Didn't
they roast like Pam Anderson?
Yeah, like now it's just they're picking people who are already punchlines. Like, oh, let's roast David Hasselhoff. It's kind of like the same thing with the Anthony Weiner jokes, where it's like, that's such a fucking easy joke that it's not interesting to me at all.
The fact that his name is Weiner is pretty crazy,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, didn't that shit used to be pronounced Weiner? When did it become Weiner? I've never heard of anyone named Weiner before this guy.
Well, maybe he...
Weiner Schnitzel.
I think that's his full last name, by the way.
Didn't Chad Weiner Schnitzel run the family fortune?
Into the ground.
Yeah.
Had to distance himself from Chad, old Grandpa Chad.
All right, well, we got to get Matt Effort on the line because
let's boot him in. Is he waiting?
Yeah, he is.
Hey, boot me in.
What are you doing?
I'm right here. Why don't you boot me in?
I will fight every blogger here.
Ooh, well, we got one for you, and it's your former roommate.
Oh, well, I probably actually don't want to fight him.
He gets kind of crazy.
Yeah.
You can take a terrible peripheral vision. Great sense of smell, but can't see to the sides.
My vision's based on movement. Also, my vision is based on bowel movement.
If you fight him in a green screen area and we're all green, he's fucked.
It's a thing. I can only see when I poop.
What's going on, guys?
What's going on?
Not much, you know, just... living in the world of Spross, aka sports, you know.
So are you scuba diving for Aaron Hernandez's semi-automatic weapons in the pond?
No, I'm just leaping to the conclusion that he's super guilty and, you know, calling him a thug and whatnot.
What?
Is he an elite thug?
He
really is an elite thug. It's like it turns out that he's probably... Possibly killed a lot of people, and that makes him an elite thug.
Matt, can't we just skip the facts of the case and skip to the part where we generalize about the thug athlete culture? I mean, can't we just turn this into a teaching moment without actually engaging any of the facts of the case?
You let these football players from like get raised in one parent homes and get tattoos, they're going to be murdering people.
Yeah, I mean, these ball chuckers, they just, you know, they're all the same. They have a culture of violence that they're part of.
Well, specifically murder.
Right.
No, it's, you know, you have to have a respect for the game. And when it was Johnny Unitas and John Elway doing their thing, you didn't see them killing people. You didn't see them sleeping with women outside of their marriage. Oh, wait, they did that. So yeah, I don't know.
When quarterbacks had crew cuts and things were different, you know, you didn't have the general of the team going out there all covered in tats like a prisoner, like
things
Colin Kaepernick.
Things were a lot better before we let women and minorities do things.
I sometimes I miss the slave days.
Vince, we know. How's that plantation coming? You got the blueprints out yet?
No, I was just laughing because earlier this week when, like, you know, everybody in my Facebook feed was crying about Brian Wilson and how he went to the Dodgers. I was like, oh, yeah, it's weird that, you know, a player might want to go to a new team that will sign him. Like, don't you? It's what a traitor. I miss the slave days.
I'm always surprised when there are people who, like, don't get me wrong. I have teams that I support. I like live and die by certain sports teams, But at the end of the day, I still recognize that, like, these are businesses. Yeah. And, like,
and employees.
Getting upset that Brian Wilson went to the Dodgers is like getting upset about, like, Starbucks changing its dark roast. Like, it's a business decision.
Or that, more like your favorite barista going from Starbucks to Pete's.
Yeah, exactly. That's really what it is. And it's like, oh, what have I done? But I'm loyal to Starbucks, but I really like this barista that's going over to Pete's.
Todd puts a heart in my latte.
And, like, listen, I don't want to take anything away from Cleveland fans who got burned by LeBron James, but, like, he's a human being who took a better job in Miami to leave Cleveland. If that was anybody else on the planet, you'd be like, oh, that's awesome. You're moving to Miami? Yeah. You step up.
Wait, you don't want to stay in Cleveland? It seems so awesome there.
I know, and it's one of those things where it's like, you have to build your own franchise. And it's like, no. I mean, Vince, I left the Uproxx family, which I love very much. I still, like, do my side work at Kissing Susie Colbert. But, like, I left Uproxx, something that I, like, helped build and cared about very much, for a place that gave me health insurance.
And, like, you fucking traitor.
Would, like, that's just the reality of business. Like, I'm going to take this job that's, like, giving me more perks.
You traitorous poo-butt motherfucker.
Yeah, you exactly.
Health insurance, Vince?
And I do, but I pay for it out of pocket.
I love that people are laughing at you. You pay for health insurance.
I just was laughing at Brett's laugh.
On the plus side, I don't get taxes taken out of my paycheck, so there generally is enough there to pay for health insurance.
Say that. You cannot say that. Vince once wrote off his student loans as a business expense.
That's not true. Not true.
Everyone quiet. FBI.
editing all this out.
Yeah, FBI's listening as we speak. You guys know the NSA now listens to every podcast, right?
It's true. Yeah. Skype. And it's Skype.
Yeah, they listen to Skype. They listen to podcasts. They listen to everything. Anything that you say. Just really quick on Aaron Hernandez, I just really liked that he played a full football season after potentially murdering two people. It's pretty, I mean, impressive. And then his flaw was killing the guy that knew about the other two.
Oh, is that why he killed him? I haven't been following it.
That's
very
a bit
well.
Of a bugaboo.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh.
This other guy knew about the other two and was maybe associating with people that Mr. Hernandez didn't like. And then he might have even killed him himself. And then my other favorite part is that when the cops showed up for, like, hey, we're going to get your phone and your security camera footage. Oh, here's my phone. And it was in 10,000 pieces, completely smashed. And then, oh, you want my security footage? Yeah. And it was also, like, broken. And
I feel like Aaron Hernandez security is very much he's like the Owen Wilson character from Zoolander, where he's like, they're in the computer. And so he just smashes it to pieces. I don't know. That's just me? Okay, it's just me.
I think he watched about 15 too many episodes of CSI. And he's like, oh, no, dude, we're good. You throw the gun into the lake. You smash your phone. Just erase all the...
I already have footprints anymore.
Yeah. You walk backwards so that they don't think you walked out of there. You walk backwards in your footsteps.
That's a classic move. I like that.
Yeah. And you're good. You're scot-free. Let's go play some football.
If you walk through a stream and climb up a tree and then jump off the branch, the dogs can't track you because they can't get up. The dogs can't climb trees.
No. And once you're through
flaw.
The water.
That's the fatal flaw of dogs.
Yeah. And if you go through too deep water, they're going to lose the scent.
That's right.
So especially if you go into the stream and go like quarter mile in the water.
Mm-hmm.
There, the scent is gone.
You swim, well, you float downstream, really.
For sure.
You could swim upstream, but it seems, you know, it's unnecessary.
Even, like, if you wanted to, you could go tubing for a little bit. Like, right. You're get a couple brews mm-hmm. and celebrate your murder.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, you got away with another one, so.
Yeah, yeah. So what's on the docket tonight?
What do you guys think about Mumblecore?
The movie genre?
Yeah.
The only thing I know is that the Duplass dudes. That's all I really know about it. What else?
Isn't that from late aughts?
Yeah, like I don't think I haven't seen any of the original Mumblecore. I've only seen the movies of the post Mumblecore movies of the guys that came up doing Mumblecore.
I assume you have a point.
Hold on a second. I'm Googling Mumblecore.
I really don't like the name, by the way.
I really don't. I don't think they do either. I don't think anyone does.
And it all started from the puffy chair, correct? That was the virgin birth?
Something like that.
Let's see. Andrew Bujalski has been described as the godfather of mumblecore. His 2002 directorial debut, Funny Ha Ha, is generally considered to be the first mumblecore film. That's from Wikipedia.
Wikipedia nice. Never lies.
Nice. I've seen Cyrus, which was the Duplass Brothers, and then I just saw Drinking Buddies, which was Joe Swanberg, who I know he was a mumblecore guy, at least in so much as he'd had the boxing match with Devin Faraci over mumblecore.
They fought over the word?
Devin Faraci's like a film critic, and he like has a strong anti mumblecore stance. So at Fantastic Ooh. Fest, they did like this debate boxing match thing between him and Joe Swanberg, who was like a mumblecore filmmaker.
That sounds like one of the nerdiest things that's ever happened on Earth.
Yeah.
Shit with Bull?
Say that again?
Like the shit with you, Bull?
Uwe?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Uwe Bull? Yeah. Similar, yeah. And the outcome was similar also.
What, just two guys sort of awkward? sweating and running around?
No, the film critic getting beat up.
The film critic always gets beat up. That's the point. The director is always in better
shape. You need to go fight someone to give film critics, like, to get back a little bit of your good name.
No one ever challenges me, oddly.
You should just start challenging everybody. Just for, like, 2 days. Just, like, every actor or director you can think of. Just say, I will fight you. Send. I will fight you and tweet it out.
Vince, I'm looking at the Mumblecore Wikipedia page, and the only Mumblecore guy I've heard of is Mark Duplass, and the only Mumblecore film I've even heard of is The Puffy Chair, and I've never seen The Puffy Chair. And, like, I feel like I do a pretty good job of following film drunk. I live in New York City, so I'm not immune to indie films. And this is shit that I haven't even heard about at
all.
Well,
if you follow Film Drunk, it's not you wouldn't hear about Mumblecore because I haven't really followed Mumblecore.
It really does need a full marketing makeover.
Elite.
Yes, he's in the league. He's the guy who his wife left him in season 1, episode 1.
Wow, someone is a fan.
All right, you know what? I really like the league. I think it's a good show.
I do. I find the league extraordinarily hit and miss. Like, some shows are really amazing and then other shows are not.
I think what it is that, like, it's a bunch of comedians slash actors that I only find intermittently funny. Like, Paul Scheer, I find sometimes really grating, and like sometimes, like, his Arsenio Hall remakes that he's doing right now I think are hilarious.
Yeah.
And same thing with crap. What's his face?
Zoot Mantzoukas?
Just basically every actor on the show, I find, like, sometimes I think they're really hilarious, and sometimes I'm just like, I can't stand you.
Yeah. I think it's, like, the part of the conceit of the show seems off somehow. Like, I don't know. Every time they have the kids on there, I have to change it, because the little girl is, like, the worst actress on Earth.
Yeah.
I hate kids. I feel like every show with kids, like, even if you have a show, all those Disney Channel shows, they shouldn't have been kids. It should have been grown-ups dressed like kids with kids as extras. Like, you should never have child actors.
Wow.
This is becoming a regular thing, but that's a really good idea.
It's fine. They did it on in Living Color. It works fine. Like, if you put a grown man in, like, a fucking propeller beanie and have him, like, talk like a kid, you can easily accept him as a kid.
They're teens in the way porn stars are teens, where they have like a beret, like a scrunchie that's neon.
Yeah.
And that makes a teenager.
Well, it's just like you put a sign on them that says, I'm a teen. And you're like, all right, fine. I will suspend disbelief enough to pretend that this guy is like a little kid. And that's fine. Whatever.
Especially if they're really old, it'd be better. Like, they're 70. Yeah.
Oh, God. That'd be great.
I am your 8-year-old son.
Look, yeah, I don't get it.
Read
why,
this
like...
sign. Read it. It says I'm 8.
Why, like, children have to play children, but then, like, 28-year-olds play high school students.
Yeah. Well, but for a while, they did the thing where you had to be a black midget to play a kid on TV.
That's messed up.
Well, as Joe always says, the 80s was the golden age of black midgets playing on.
There was two of them.
Yeah, so. And they were both really popular.
Really popular. So, Vince, just question, why did you bring up this Mumblecore thing?
Oh, because I saw Drinking Buddies, which was one of the Mumblecore guys' movies. I don't know if this one obviously I don't think qualifies as Mumblecore because it had like a cinematographer and, you know, actors that you've heard of.
Put effort into it, so it's not really Mumblecore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought the whole thing of Mumblecore was it was super low budget, you know, shot by the director and acted in by the director and such things of this nature.
So how is Drinking Buddies? I have not heard of it.
You know, I thought it was interesting. I didn't ultimately like it. I thought.
So does that mean like a C, solid C?
I gave it like a C plus.
Ooh.
B minus, C plus. Because here's the thing, like it has these this relationship that I found sort of recognizable. Like it was sort of this girl who was the two main characters work together at this brewery. She's a PR rep and he's a brewer, and they each have a girlfriend and boyfriend who's not the other, but they're like flirting the whole movie, and it's sort of like a love quadrangle. And
could it be a parallelogram?
I call it a rhombus in my review. Which I believe is a parallelogram. Parallelogram is a type of rhombus.
I just prefer, yeah, I prefer there to be perfectly parallel.
Okay.
All the
right.
lines.
Right. I don't want any 90 degree angles.
Sorry, it's geometry humor. It's yeah. where I live.
That and puns, right, Brett?
Yeah. Well, no.
So they do this whole thing where, you know, they have all this sexual tension and they're obviously like each other, but they can't quite connect. And they also, have you ever seen two people flirt where they sort of flirt like sixth graders, where they're just like sort of pulling each other's pigtails and like
just throwing, a lot of giggling?
Giggling that's, and throwing.
You won't realize this because you're drunk at the time, but that's exactly how you flirt all the time.
Oh, I know. I'm fully aware.
Yeah. Are you?
I'm fully aware. I wouldn't want to watch myself flirt. I would fucking puke.
Awful. It's awful. It makes me less human watching you flirt.
It's pretty bad.
Whatever. Justin's is way worse.
Yeah, no.
Yes, he is. I don't go up to girls and be like, you're adorable.
But he touches their face and they don't want him to. And that's hilarious because they don't want him to touch their face and they're avoiding his hand trying to touch their face.
Oh man, I hope he's in the car listening to this with his wife.
Being single
that's
must
be how awful. They met.
That's true. That is how they met. So they can't be, you know, they can't really deny that.
Pretty good. That is rich.
So anyway, they have this flirtation style where they're just, they're verbally sparring, but not actually listening to anything that the other person says, which is okay at the beginning because, you know, if you're just getting to know someone. But they, like, know each other, and they just continue this throughout the whole movie.
They've been hanging out for 60 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, over an hour.
Yeah, pretty much. So at a certain point, you're like, all right, we get it. Like, I get that these type of people exist. Now you got to put it into a story.
Now you got to fuck.
Yeah.
You just were waiting for the fuck.
Yeah, I wanted to see dongs going in. It ain't a rom-com without dongs going in, as I always say.
Listen, I would like to add to this conversation by playing a YouTube video. Hold on a second. Anyway, that's a donkey making noise to a trumpet.
That donkey hates that trumpet.
He really does.
Did you were you walking through Justin Halpern's house when you found that?
Yeah, I called him up and I was like, Justin, talk to me about, and then it was just trumpets and donkeys.
Hold on. I'm doing something.
I'm trying something out.
Hey, hold on. I'm spitballing something right now. I got something going.
Hold on, hold on. The Ohio State marching band is trying to direct traffic on this runway.
And while I'm riding a donkey. Give me a second. Can I put you on hold?
Yeah. The plane is, they're all filled with peacocks. I don't know what to do.
Sorry.
No,
that.
Not a problem.
You enjoy that immensely.
I really do. This guy, there's a fence in between him and the donkey, and he's just playing the trumpet at it. The donkey fucking hates it.
He is not a Saints fan. That donkey, not a Saints fan.
Yeah.
I did want to play you guys the crazy rhubarb lady.
I saw this, but I didn't. I saw the link to it, but I didn't actually watch it. So I'm intrigued by this.
So basically, this lady has been going around this little town in Iowa and stealing people's rhubarb.
What?
Which is amazing.
A capital crime.
Yeah, and so they catch her, and turns out she's really vulgar. And she likes to cuss people out.
Does she put the rhubarb places that...
She's stealing it from their garden?
Yeah, there's like a part...
Sorry, that was an accident.
It's like we have a Vince in New York.
Yeah, I know.
That was a complete accident.
From what I can tell in the video, it's sort of like they have a fence and the rhubarb plant is sort of overgrowing from the fence like into sort of an alley.
So
she's sort of...
Forgive me, Top Chef, but what's rhubarb exactly? What does it look like?
It is a root. It is a reddish.
It looks like a radish. Celery.
It goes nicely with strawberry and pies.
It's like a tart reddish celery looking thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Okay. I've actually never had rhubarb.
What?
Oddly.
You're a Top Chef and you've never had it?
I made a whole pot pie today, but I didn't make any.
You made another pot? You really on this pot pie kick.
I like pot pies, man. That puff pastry. Oh, man.
Roll around in it?
Yeah.
I'm going to make myself a pot pie.
I'm going to wrap myself in it like a robe. I'm so buttery.
So we have video of the rhubarb lady.
Look at me flaking.
The boss of her.
Yeah, so this is the rhubarb lady. She basically, I think she's trying to steal the rhubarbs from the part
is
of
she just
the,
a really big fan of rhubarb? What's her deal?
She must be.
Yeah.
You can if it crosses into public property, isn't that public rhubarb?
I think that's what the debate is over in this video.
This is going to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You Pinocchio fucking knows the money your own business.
Why don't you?
Why don't you?
Why don't you take some? Why don't you grow your own?
This is not your fucking property. Go somewhere else.
Well, isn't that property?
Fuck you. Go mind your own business.
No. You just don't know what's right and wrong, do you?
You're fucking.
You like to steal.
You stick your nose in everybody's fucking business. This is goddamn alley property, bitch.
No, it's not.
This don't have your name on it. Where's your name, bitch?
Excuse me.
Where's your name, bitch? Where's your name? Where's your fucking name on this alley property, bitch?
Where's yours?
This is anybody that wants to take it. Yes, it is.
Okay, if it's anybody's property, why don't you come up here and mow it?
Because my lawnmower is stolen, bitch, by a fucking pig.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, any Iranian pigs around here.
My lawnmower was stolen, bitch, by a fucking pig.
How'd you fiddle? I could.
They typed it out.
Oh, you're reading the subtitles.
Does she look like Danny DeVito's penguin?
No, she looks like.
Sounds like she's had a couple too many cigarettes in her day.
She looks
like imagining her as Danny DeVito as the penguin.
Yeah, you could do that. I
appreciate that. Like that, Stephen Baldwin is in this video. Give me the keys, you fucking cocksucker. Yeah.
She actually looks like Susan Boyle in a Elvis wig.
Wow.
That sounds great.
Like an overgrown sort of like a bouffant.
Now I'm picturing her in an Elvis wig singing karaoke, and I think it's pretty great.
Sort of like Elvis's hair in the 70s when it was just sort of overgrown, like sort of a caricature of itself.
Like Big Fat Pill Elvis?
Yeah.
Pill Poppin' Elvis?
She kind of looks like Big Fat Pill Elvis.
All right, I'm in.
They don't steal. That's right. Who was stolen by,
right,
bitch.
So that's why you're so mad and you steal from everybody else.
Oh, I ask, bitch. I'm asking three fucking places. They don't answer their fucking doors.
Hold on.
Never ask my mom who.
This isn't hers.
Yeah.
She'd make a really good golem. I'm just saying.
She really would.
Yes, it is.
What the hell?
No, you.
You don't know how to cook, anyway.
Oh, are you videotaping?
I'm videotaping.
Oh,
who's this third party all of a sudden?
Oh yeah, we videotaping.
Cameraman.
We videotaping.
You know where the alley is? Yeah, right here. Yeah, that's the
right there. Your fence is there, bitch. Go mind your own business.
A little windy in Rhubarb Town.
I like that she calls her a fucking Leslie and a fucking Pinocchio nose.
Oh, I didn't get that. The wind got me.
You Pinocchio fucking nose. Go mind your own business.
It's an angry lady.
She's really angry.
What kind of drugs do you need to take to get that going for you?
Old age?
No.
You don't just take old age.
That helps.
Well, I mean, yeah, it doesn't hurt, but I don't...
That's the greatest psychedelic we have, Ben.
Is old age?
Yeah.
So that's what I have to look forward to? Just picking rhubarb, yelling at people?
It ain't gonna go uphill from here.
No, we're going down into rhubarb town. I get that, but I didn't realize that...
The gradual descent into rhubarb town.
Oh,
God, don't let it end like this in rhubarb town.
You didn't read that Dostoevsky novel?
Rhubarb town?
Slow descent into rhubarb town.
Forget it, Jake. It's rhubarb town.
All of the end of Kafka is just... And they slit his throat like a dog in rhubarb town.
The end.
So we got that going for us.
Between the donkey and rhubarb town, we're doing pretty good.
It's kind of the same thing. It's really just someone playing a trumpet across a fence at someone else that does not like the trumpet.
That is true. The trumpets were made of rhubarb.
So she's just a really, really big fan of rhubarb, or does she just like taking anything that's grown onto to alleyways?
She's the rightful owner of the alley property.
Well, she's saying anyone's the rightful owner.
I think she's into foraging, and
to the rhubarb first.
Which is not, it's not a foraging thing. She's a bridge troll, but in the alley.
She's an alley troll.
Yeah, you got to pay the toll, and the toll is paid in rhubarb.
It's my rhubarb. Did you answer the three questions? No, bitch. Answer the three riddles. It's my rhubarb,
bitch.
Fuck you. Fucking Lizzie. Fucking Leslie, it's my fucking rhubarb. Fuck you. I don't see your fucking name on it.
It's totally like an Aesop's fable, because the pig stole her lawnmower and now she's got to take all the rhubarb out of her alley.
And the pigs started a whole, they started a whole socialist government in the barn, overthrew the horses.
Just mowing all the lawns.
It started a pretty lucrative business, actually.
Well, the pigs convinced the sheep to just keep yelling out their slogans.
Ah, oh, fucking sheep, man.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, that felt good. That felt real good.
I like that Gollum is doing more than just searching for a ring.
No, apparently he likes vegetables. Is rhubarb a vegetable?
Are you asking people, Top Chef?
Stalk with some leaves.
Yeah, it's a veggie.
Okay.
I'm gonna type it in.
So I had
vegetable. It looks like a chard.
Yeah, definitely a chard family. All right, so I had a theory on Chopped.
Okay.
I think every basket of Chopped should have one ingredient that's toxic.
Okay.
And they just don't, like, you know, they just have to figure out, they just have to know.
But they have to use all the ingredients so everyone will die every episode.
No, they just have to know how to prepare it.
So what sort of things are on your mind?
Like, actually, what he doesn't know is that these nuts have to be soaked in a stream for 3 days before they're not toxic.
Not going to work with a 30-minute time.
They will have 20 minutes to prepare an appetizer.
It's okay if everyone dies every episode. I'm okay with that show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially that bitch who doesn't like red onions. Who's that guy?
Conant.
Yeah, what? No.
Wait,
screw
what?
Him. Oh, red onions.
Scott
Dude.
Conant.
No.
So, like... I'm sorry, but like that's just one of those things where I'm so irritated by like someone's personal preference is pushed out as like the God's truth, and then like no one should ever cook with red onions because one person doesn't like them.
Yeah, like,
what the hell's in his guacamole?
Dicks.
Dick-a-mole.
Yeah.
What? When's pot pie week?
Ooh, they should have a pot pie week. Man, you could put so much in a pot. Well, the hard thing about, you couldn't cook a pot pie in 30 minutes, especially not if you're making the crust from scratch. No way, no how, son.
Does your meat pie fascination stem from your time in Australia?
It could be part of it.
Because when we were living together in Brooklyn, there was that place like three blocks away that had the meat pies that you were all about.
Yeah, it wasn't very good, though.
No, they weren't very good. Like, they were, like, insane. Like, they would make them insanely hot, and then they weren't, like, that good of pies. And you're like, Why just burn my mouth for nothing?
Yeah. Someone actually had a question about that, an emailer. Well, not about that specifically, but about Australia. Hi, guys. Here's a quick question. You've alluded to playing rugby while you were in Australia. Did you have any exposure to cricket? There's a theory that Americans are incapable of understanding it. Cheers, James, Tim, Mike.
I watched a little bit of it because I had some friends that liked it. I thought it was very boring, and the fact that it goes on for a minimum of a full day was a bit obscene.
I will say, yeah, me and Brett also went to a cricket match. I had no idea what was going on.
But that was because we were blackout drunk almost immediately upon arrival. That wasn't anything to do with the rules. I think the rules in theory are easily understood. It's just that.
No, because I went to Australia too, and I like sincerely and genuinely like asked people about cricket while a cricket game was on, and they explained it, and I was like, what? And yet at the same time, in my like brief time in Australia, I was able to fully comprehend like the difference between rugby league and rugby union.
Yeah.
So I think cricket is just fucking incomprehensible. It's like trying to learn Icelandic.
Have you ever tried to explain gridiron to an Australian that only has rugby as a point of reference, though? It's very hard to describe why it doesn't go on the whole game. Commercials, and then they have to think about it. They have to think about what the next play is gonna, and they just sort of stare at you.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, also you have to factor in that Australians are some of the most charming people on earth, but like thinking is not their strong suit.
Ouch, harsh words. I will say that part of
the Australian scientist,
Dr. Mick
Billabong,
Professor Mick Billabong,
Professor of Croc Stabbing,
Doctor of Surfing.
he's an expert shark relocator. I take sharks.
He's got
to move them.
He's got
away from the swimmers.
PhD in beer drinking.
I will say part of the problem with cricket, I don't know if it's hard for me to know whether it's that hard to understand or whether just the fact that you watch it and then someone starts explaining it to you and then you watch it be so boring that you don't care enough to try and figure out how it works. Whereas rugby, you're like, oh, okay, I want to know.
Yeah, that was more of my issue with cricket, where baseball's by far the most similar. And I have a hard enough time watching a random baseball game. Yeah, I like the San Francisco Giants, and I can watch all of their games. You know, now I'm waving the white flag, so I probably won't watch many more this year because they're probably out of it. But I can't just watch a Reds Pirates game. I'll be bored in 2 seconds with that as well.
Yeah.
So when it's like Australia versus India cricket test match that'll potentially go for 3 days.
Five.
Well, there's the single day matches, there's 3 day matches, there's 5 day matches. But
I don't understand how that goes on for so long. Like, all I know is that I know that there's bowlers and there's batsmen and they're trying to knock down wickets. But then and like a single at bat or whatever can go on for like 2 days.
And you're not allowed to throw like a human. You have to bowl it like a retard.
I don't even know, man. Like,
and if you bend your elbow too much, they call you a chucker. And that's like a bad thing to be.
Holy shit, did you know that rhubarb is both cathartic and laxative? Vince, this is your fruit / vegetable.
Wait, cathartic? What do you mean?
It aids in the process of defecation.
I had no idea that was a scientific term for something that happened in digestion.
That's laxative, which is a substance that eases defecation, usually softening the feces.
And what's the cathartic one?
It makes it go fast.
Ooh.
So accidentally,
someone is on rhubarb.com.
So you just
rhubarb.
You just you grease up your intestines.
Yeah, well, you grease them up with the laxative, but then you shoot it out with the cathartic.
Vince, I know this
catharticus.
I know this alley troll. She's got the best rhubarb in town.
Maybe she's really constipated. That's why she's so pissed off.
That's how the fable ends, is you having to go on a vision quest to the alley troll so that you can poop fast.
She's a little grumpy, but she's got good rhubarb. Alley Rhubarb.
Oh, that's her nickname, Alley Rhubarb. All right, so we have another question. This one's a relationship question, so maybe more up Matt's alley.
Matt, are you a relationship expert now?
Well, I'm not an expert, but I do have a column on Kissing Susie Colbert that that tackles relationship and sex questions, and also fantasy football.
Ooh, that's quite. Is it called "I'm a Relationship Expert"?
No, it's called the Sex and Fantasy Football Mailbag.
Tackle sex is my favorite kind of sex.
Yes.
I don't like touch sex. I like the full contact.
you don't
want to do flat sex. I draft RG3 and then I kiss him real gently.
All right. Greetings, Frotsman. So the company party was about a month ago, and I managed to hook up with the woman who is, without a shadow of the doubt, the hottest person working in the business. And that's not like a comparative thing where the rest of the women are dogs, blah, 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 blah. She's hot. We went back to hers. One thing led to another. You get the general idea. Anyway, I like the woman a lot. We share similar tastes and interests, and we're both single. However, there's a slight problem in that I'm 23 and she's 39. Also, she's currently going through a pretty messy divorce. Like I say, I like her a lot, and I'm more than happy to give her support through a difficult time. I don't think she has many female friends, and her children are living with the father while the divorce is finalized, maybe after that. I don't want to end up the shoulder she cries on when she's had too many margaritas. I want to be the guy she fucks to make herself feel better. To be honest, I would be nice to do something on my weekends other than work out, watch Arnold movies, and chat to the girl in the GNC store. Anyway, I wanted your advice on the best way to show I'm interested in a continuation and that it isn't a one-time thing, while not coming off desperate. Equally appreciated would be advice on how not to get friend-zoned. Thanks and fraud on. P.S. Ideally, I would like my advice from people who had actually lost their virginities at the age of 24. No offense, Vince. I'll have you know that I was much less than 24. I mean, 21 maybe, but...
I love that part of the email.
I did too.
Well, all right. Well, Matt, as our resident sex or relationship expert, go for it.
I mean, okay, first of all, the best thing you can do as a man in his early 20s is realize that you have almost nothing going for you. and you need to have some self-awareness and be like, okay, I'm 23. I'm pretty stupid and my dick makes all my decisions. And once you accept that that's really all you've got going for you is like you're a vehicle for sex for her. I really don't think that she's looking to lean on the 23-year-old for any sort of emotional support. No person who is 39 years old leans on someone who is 23 for emotional support. Unless it's like the daughter she had when she was in high school.
23-year-old males are completely fungible. Like, you're all swappable, and you've probably already been replaced. So to even assume that you have a say in how this progresses is, like, the height of not understanding how this works.
Yeah, no, I think that, like, if you send her a text and be like, I had a lot of fun, we should do that again sometime, that's really all you need to do. And then, like, if she does want to use you again for the only thing that you're good for, then she'll hit you up when she needs you. I don't think she's going to be crying on your shoulder. Like, she's got a divorce and kids to worry about.
Yeah, hang around, smile, flirt, and your, it's going to be her decision is what
keep
happens.
Keep your boner at the ready.
Yeah.
And listen, I'm not trying to like be negative about being young and in party mode out of college, or if you being new to the workforce, if you didn't go to college, whatever. Like, there's nothing wrong with being 23. The best thing you can do is just be self-aware about it. Like, dude, when I was 23, I just wish somebody had pulled me aside and been like, you're an immature piece of shit and you're not worth anything.
But you're not fucking great.
And like, if someone could have beaten that into my head in my early 20s, I would have made so many better decisions. But I didn't, because I was in my early 20s.
Also, that haircut looks stupid.
Yeah. fix your hair, continue going to the gym, and
pull your pants
it.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah, just hang around. Look, you're a penis in a glass case at this point, and there's... You can't the penis in the glass case doesn't really get to make any decisions.
Glass case of boners.
Yeah,
yeah, that's good advice. I don't really have much to add. I mean, I think, like Matt said, you know, send a text, say, hey, that was fun, we should grab a drink sometime, and then see what happens. Seems like there's a lot going on. I don't think it's just going to be straight into like new relationship with a 23-year-old coworker.
Yeah. Also, at the same time, you got to realize that like, you don't want to be not that she's looking for this, but you also don't want to be in a relationship with a 39-year-old woman if you're 23. Like, that's just a really horrible idea. So don't be too available.
Especially one that is just going through a big, messy divorce with children.
Yeah.
All right, we got another question.
Proceed.
Yeah. For the whole panel. Whoa, easy there. No donkeys on the keyboards, please.
Someone just had too much rhubarb.
Yeah. They get all rambunctious.
Do you imagine if you could poop in, like, a second flat? Just, like, all of it out?
Stop. What, you mean you can't?
Easy, Fissure.
Easy, Amy Fissure.
Vinny Fissure over here. Fissure King, trying to tell people what's what.
For the whole panel, in a week, my wife's best friend and her boyfriend are coming to visit and stay with us for several days. This would normally be fine, but we know that they're going through some serious relationship issues, and mutual friends have been telling us that they're on the verge of breaking up. Nevertheless, the tickets are bought, so they're coming. Any advice on dealing with this situation? Drunk on, Emmett.
Provide opportunity for them to have it out where you're not in the other room.
Yeah, that comes down to, like, is it a two-bedroom in Manhattan, or is this, like, a three-bedroom house in Kansas City? Like, I think part of it has to deal with, like, space, because if they're fighting in the next room or, like, you know, the bedrooms are like share a wall, then like you got to get out. But if it's the sort of thing where like, oh, hey, we're giving them the basement and they've got run of the downstairs to just have at it, then that's a different story entirely.
I mean, first of all, it depends on, you know, how long they're going to be there. Did it say for the weekend or a week?
Several days.
That's survivable. So, yeah. Whatever, you have a couple events where, you know, you're all getting dinner and drinks, and, you know, that'll take up most of the time anyway. I mean, it is definitely true how much space you're sharing. I mean, personally, it's like, yeah, I mean, if I listen to them fight, it might be some good eavesdropping, too.
I love a good eavesdropping.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Here's my advice. If you see them start to fight, if you see them, they're sharing that glance like they're about to start fighting, just get out of the way. No matter, in all cases, if they're going to fight, just let them fight. Give them like a little space. Even if they're at the same table, maybe you and your wife talk amongst yourselves as they're fighting. The last thing you want to do is, you know, try to calm them down while they're mid-fight or... try to, you know, interject anything. Like, don't make it obvious where you're like, hey, let's go over here now and have some pie, you guys. Just, you know.
Well, but is it pot pie?
That's a good, important distinction. If you see him fighting, let it be and its course.
It's cat rules. You don't interfere, but you can spray them both with the hose if it gets really bad.
Yeah, if it gets really bad. If they start, you know, if eyes start coming out of sockets.
Yeah, if there's swipes with claws, then just spray them with the hose. They're going to both do their own thing.
Because you have to realize, too, that this weekend is, you know, it's going to happen regardless. Enjoy the time with them. What they're dealing with is their issues.
Oh, and definitely pick sides. Pick sides as soon as they get there and make it known who you pick.
Oh, no, yeah. As soon as they get there, you say, I'm on this person's side. And hopefully you and your significant other are on the same team.
Oh, no. Pick different teams and play it like fantasy football.
Rochambeau?
Yeah.
I would also recommend minimize the time where it's just the four of you. Like, so you want to send your wife out with her best friend while you go grab a couple beers and watch the sports ball event with the dude, because like any two dudes can hang out and watch a sport together.
Is that where the sports guys, they dress up in gowns and they dance the waltz?
Yeah, the sports ball events. So send out the girls to have some girls time, and then, like, you know, that dude can either, if he has friends in the city, can either, like, hang out with his friends, or you can, you know, drink beers together. And then maybe send them out on their own. Hey, you guys should have a date night. Go to this place. We even made you a reservation.
And then you change the locks on your house.
Like, send them out on their own to experience their own time so that they've got some, like, time alone in the city. And then, like, if you can get
some sort of like get together that's you know, 8, 10, 12 people, so that they're not like that like increases the amount of interaction. Anything to avoid it being just the four of you under one roof. I think that's the thing that you want to minimize the most of.
Matt's kind of good at this.
That's why he does it for money.
That's why he's got a column, Brett.
Dude, do you have a column? Don't think so.
Give him vent time where you're like pre-established time where you're not in the place so that they can yell at each other knowing that if they can just save it up half an hour more, you're going to go feed the neighbor's dog or whatever.
Yeah, it's good.
Feed the kitty.
If it's only a couple days too, it's not like, hey, they're going to be staying with us for a month. And, you know, it's like a couple days is very survivable.
Yeah. All right. I think we knocked this one out. We got another question, though. Last one.
Well, now, because is it the one new pickup line? Question mark.
What's that?
New pickup line? Is that?
No, I didn't even look at that one.
Because that one's in Matt's wheelhouse, I think.
Oh, yeah. All right. You can read that. Go ahead. No, read that one.
Go, Vince.
No. I can do two questions.
Yeah.
All right. This one.
Read one from Ben, one word, and then one from Vince and see who wins.
No. Olaf Rotsters, I need a little perspective on the dating game and was hoping one or more of you could give me your two cents. I'm 33 and I've been out of the dating game for a while. Last week, I found myself at a local pool surrounded by attractive women who looked to be 20 to 23 years old.
Same email, by the way.
While I enjoyed the Idiot. Eye candy. I read the one you said because you said it.
Oh, sorry.
While I enjoyed the eye candy, I didn't try to hit on any of them due to the age difference. I was talking about this with some friends over the weekend, and one of them, a woman of about our age, told me that I should have just struck up a conversation with one of the women by saying, "You're absolutely adorable." No, terrible idea.
Our friend Justin's favorite thing to say on the planet.
This struck.
Gotta touch her face. You gotta touch her face, and she doesn't want it, but you gotta reach for it anyway. You're adorable.
This struck me as positively the worst idea, but she swore it'd work, and her boyfriend and other people said it wasn't that bad an idea. What Terrible do you guys idea. Think? Were they just completely fucking with me, or is that a viable idea?
Terrible idea.
Regardless, what do you think about guys our age hitting on women about 10 years younger? I'm not completely opposed to it, but think there might be some sketchiness to it. Stay classy and good chins, John B. Can I jump in here?
Jump in.
I think we're all in agreement that "you're adorable" is fucking horrible for a pickup line.
It's something that you say to puppies and pandas.
You're either gay or a grandpa.
I can tell my wife that she's adorable when she says something funny, and that's okay because I've got like that's in the can. I got that. You can't say that to a woman that you want to sleep with, especially if she is considerably younger than you. Because then it's like, oh, hey, thanks, Humbert.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend I'm some Neil Strauss kind of guy, but it is true that the more girls that you talk to, the more chance you have to attract one of them.
It's a numbers game.
It's not. I mean, that's
familiar with
that. I don't
think
that's anything crazy. Also, as far as pickup lines go, just try and intuit the situation and find some common ground and talk to her like a person. Don't go with "you're beautiful," "I like your shoes," "that shit's fucking stupid." Just, look around, assess the situation, think of something interesting to say about what's going on. Like, make it a sort of a common thing that you share or point something out. You know, you're in this together. You're in the same place together. So sort of find common ground and, you know.
Yeah, and
hopefully something like clever-ish, but not overwrought.
And
if you're at this pool and surrounded by like really good-looking younger women, be like, you can make a comment about like, "Are you excited about trying Adult Swim for the first time?" I don't know. That's better than "you're adorable."
Yeah,
I don't know. Here's the thing. If you're a 33-year-old male and I'm going to make the assumption that you're somewhat established in your chosen career path, women younger than 25 are in generally going to be murder to talk to, especially if they're really good looking, because they don't have anything interesting to say whatsoever.
Yeah. Bold move. You know, just pull your dick out and see what happens. She'll appreciate
it. Just lay it on them real casual.
Yeah. Just be like, "Hey, it's not going to suck itself."
They put it on their shoulder.
They like that because it shows you're funny.
And decisive.
You're decisive. Exactly. No, I don't know. I've never been able to pull off the pool hit on.
That's a weird.
I don't feel comfortable talking to strange, like beautiful strangers in bikinis, and where it was just like, hey, I've noticed that you're barely not wearing any clothes, and I like what I see.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'm talking to you because I want to see what little is not covered.
There is no way that you could possibly pull off that conversation without just staring at their boobs the whole time.
Hey, yeah. I've stopped going to the gym. So, how are your breasts?
That either that or dick on the shoulder, and you're good.
Yeah.
I'm good with the 10 years younger, but Matt is right. Most often, hard to hold a long, meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
But it's...
Or 2 hours of a date, as it were.
A couple drinks. Didn't kill anybody.
Yeah.
Vince, do I hear the tinges of someone not being thrilled about the dating scene?
No, I'm enjoying myself still.
That's good.
You know, it gets like stand up. You have a good set, and then some, and then you have, and then you bomb. You know, there's ups and downs, peaks and valleys. When I'm going down in the valley, I like to raise my hands up like I'm on a roller coaster. That makes it more fun.
Valley.
When I'm going down to a pit of despair.
I bet. Do you refer to that while she's there? You're like, time to hit another valley, baby.
Yeah, she just starts talking. She says, "Why are you raising your hands up?" And I'm like, "I'm going down."
Headed to the valley.
Headed to the valley of despair.
You want to come? There is a rhubarb lady.
I also like the idea of going down in the valley as being a double entendre for cunnilingus, mm-hmm. Which makes you putting your
that he's referring to
putting your hands up as you do it even better.
That's what I figured. He was just referring to all these nice ladies' vaginas as the valley of despair, which made me really happy.
That's like a good Bob Dylan song, going down to the valley of despair.
And then your hands are up.
Whee! You put your hands up like it's a roller coaster.
Whee! All right.
just pull your head up occasionally to say whee.
All right, last question, then we got to get Sammy on here. This one is from commenter Larry. Apropos of nothing other than the fact that the movie was mentioned today, I'm curious as to what Ufford thought of Three Kings. I'm wondering if having been in the military has biased me against it, or if he has a similar antipathy. It is also a bad title on multiple levels.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've watched it. And I think the first time I watched it was before I was in the Marines. So I don't think that I've got a very well-formed opinion, but I kind of agree with what Vince was saying on, was it Twitter earlier, that the comment section?
Yeah.
Where the first two acts are really strong and then it kind of falls apart because David O. Russell, you know, didn't have a great idea for what exactly it should be.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I will say, in general, war movies, I can accept the fact that they don't have to be a perfect portrayal of the military. Like I think that Black Hawk Down is probably the most accurate I've seen in terms of movies. Generation Kill is the most accurate in terms of TV. Generation Kill is awesome and like very, very much basically exactly what I experienced in the Marines in terms of like interactions and stuff like that. But
interesting. I feel like Black Hawk Down catches a lot of shit. Like I enjoyed it because if it was very process based in the same way that what's it called? The Zero Dark Thirty was very like, here are the seven things we are going to do during this movie. And a lot of people like crapped on it because it's like, oh, it's like a video game. But I kind of feel like modern warfare is similar to that. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, it's really hard. A lot of people who have served, whether it be they soldiers, Marines, what have you, will get upset about what was the best Oscar winner of 2 years ago.
Hurt Locker.
The Hurt Locker. Like the Hurt Locker, it gets so many things wrong, like tactically and militarily, that it's kind of insulting. But I can still accept it as a good movie, like. you know, without drawing, without, you know, questioning how it interprets war, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's a very, like, intense and tense movie that I find entertaining. And I can do that. I can separate the military side of me that's like, you know, at the end when they take three guys to go through the streets and hunt down, like, the one guy who got kidnapped or whatever. That's complete bullshit. Like, there's so many things that are just stupid and not realistic whatsoever. But it's still a good movie. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't need to... It must be exhausting to, like, be a cop and just be, like, have problems with every single cop movie. That's not how police procedures go. There's a lot more paperwork they should be filling out.
Come on. Cops are not that smart.
Or lawyer movies. Like legal shit is the most boring crap on the planet. And it's like,
yeah.
Well, they should have been drafting a lot more copies of cease and desist.
Where's all the redlining? When do they do the redlining?
Yeah. So like, whatever. You know, they sex it up to compress a story into 2 hours that makes it entertaining for everybody else.
How do you feel about Jarhead?
Jarhead, I think, is an excellent book. Because of Anthony Swofford's writing, is very vivid prose. That the problem is that his vivid prose is about nothing, and so when you put that onto a movie screen, nothing happens because it was a 4-day war where the guy who's writing it didn't actually pull the trigger once. So as a movie, it completely fucking sucks.
Fair.
Jake Gyllenhaal's great though.
I like the bugle.
Jake Gyllenhaal and Peter Sarsgaard are great in it. It's just a completely fucking boring movie.
Hmm. He was in Lovelace that I just saw.
He played. I'm interested.
There's what's her face gets naked a lot in it. Not surprisingly,
Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that. Before I go, I just have to say that like I could not have a larger, more throbbing boner about American Hustle.
Oh yeah, that one in Elysium, I'm pretty into. Oh, also the Counselor.
The Counselor. I don't know this one.
That's the Cormac McCarthy one with Brad Pitt and Javier Bardem.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Elysium is Boner City for sure.
For sure.
So many boners on this broadcast.
Oh man.
I guess that makes sense actually.
It does.
It's called the Frotcast. It's pretty much named after rubbing boners together. So
I mean you can't have a soft wiener.
No, no one wants to frot with a soft wiener.
Get out of here, soft wiener boy.
Is Fassbender in this one?
He's in The Counselor.
And it's a Ridley Scott film of a Cormac McCarthy novel?
Cormac McCarthy, he wrote it as a script. He didn't write it as a book.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Did the actors read the script and be like, where are the apostrophes?
Yeah. Why? There's no punctuation in this. I don't. What
do I say? When do I talk?
What does friskulating mean? I don't understand this.
There's
word.
No character names. You just have to figure out who's talking.
Yeah, it's just a running dialogue.
I need
wait, your pussies.
I need to find an old. I need to find a 19th century thesaurus to understand some of these words.
How does he even find out those words?
I don't know.
They're not even in dictionaries anymore.
He just makes this shit up.
He's bluffing.
Yeah, he's totally bluffing.
At this point, he can, though, is the thing.
Yeah.
Who's going to challenge Cormac McCarthy?
I think his words are perfectly cromulent.
I've long said that Eli Cash has got to be... Eli Cash in the Royal Tenenbaums had to be, like, some sort of a play on Cormac McCarthy. Like, he seemed like a... like, Eli Cash was written as a poor man's Cormac McCarthy, where he's like, well, it's written in this obsolete prose.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's like and they went down in the friskulating dusk light. Anyway, all right, Matt. Anything you would like to plug before we let you go?
You know, Twitter is at Matt Ufford, and you can find me making internet videos just about every day at sbnation.com.
Matt,
if you like sports talk. I will talk about sports on Twitter and also say the F word fairly regularly.
How dare you, first of all. Second of all, why aren't all the writers in the background doing silly things like firing Nerf guns at you?
Oh, the writers in the background are actually, most of them are video editors. So they've got like serious stuff to do. Like, because it's not just all sports. We also have our sister companies, The Verge, which is like tech and culture, and Polygon, which is video games. So it's all a web startup, but you know, there's people that are too young, getting paid too little, doing too much work, you know, hard at work.
To worry about you and your videos.
I am in the New York City office. I am 34 years old, and I'm one of like the three or four oldest people out of 100 or so in the office.
The other guy's a janitor.
The other guy is a janitor, yes. Anyway, that's my plug, at Matt Ufford. Follow me. I will lead you to the best of the internet.
Thank you, sir.
Including film drunk in a fairly often.
It's a roundabout way.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, thanks as always for coming on.
Thanks. You nice really, talking to you.
You really earned that relationship column. You nailed those questions.
Thanks, man. I'm getting ready to write the KSK mailbag right now, so it's a good warm up for me.
All right, now you're ready to go.
I'm primed. I'm throbbing.
your intestines are all rhubarbed.
Yes. Yes, indeed, sir.
Cathartic butt.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Say hi to Aaron Hernandez.
I will. Later, guys.
All right. Bye.
All right.
All right. Well, I'm going to try and get Sammy on. He's got a regular phone, so let's see how this works.
What?
Brett, do you hear that still? Oh, shit. All right. Well, we're on with comedian Sammy Obaid, who's doing 1,000 consecutive nights of stand-up. What night are you on, by the way?
Tonight is 949.
Oh, we're down the backstretch.
Yeah, we're down to the final stretch, guys.
Can you smell the end?
Yeah, I can smell it. I can smell it from here.
So this has been a three year, like almost 3 year journey.
Almost three. It's about 2 3/4 total. I started in the day after Christmas of 2010.
Wow. So what are your yeah. feelings of the end coming up? How do you feel about that? It's almost over now.
It's almost over. It's been a hell of a ride. It's been pretty intense, especially in this last kind of stretch. So I'm partly just relieved, and kind of partly just hoping that I have a good celebration. You know, I'm writing a book about it. I'm making a documentary. I'm just hoping that we all gain something out of it.
The world will be better.
Yeah.
What all places have you been since you started?
Well, I've been all over the country, really. I started off in the Bay Area, all the clubs and side rooms there. And then I moved to L.A. Early in the streak. And I do everywhere here, all the clubs and rooms here, and then I've taken a lot of trips to New York, and then I've done a bunch of gigs on the road, like in Texas or Seattle or the middle of the country, St. Louis, colleges in North Carolina and Wisconsin and all sorts of places. So I've pretty much been everywhere. Hawaii.
Has there been any night where you were like sort of off somewhere and a show fell through and you had to scramble to find, you know, a place to do comedy in some town that you didn't know that many people in?
That's never happened in a town where I didn't know anybody in. It has happened in San Francisco, so fortunately I know everyone there, and I was able to find something. But, fortunately it hadn't happened somewhere where I didn't know where I was. But that said, it's hard enough when it happens in a city like San Francisco, where, you know, it's not as much stage time as in L.A. or New York, so I had to make some things happen a couple times. I had to kind of bum rush a bar and say, hey, can I perform for these five people? And kind of a weird favor coming from a stranger.
Yeah.
But we made it work. We made it happen.
We had a question for you from one of the listeners.
In
regards to 1,000 Days of Comedy, I heard in a different interview you gave that the Guinness Book of World Records wouldn't publish your accomplishment unless you paid something like $100,000 to have one of their reps follow you around for the whole time. If you were to get
Correct.
Super famous and make a ton of money, would you ever, even 10 or 20 years from now, repeat the 1,000 days again with a Guinness rep in tow just to get their book And that was from Steve.
Yeah, you know what? You know, I that's actually a really tough question, Steve. I if I was established and, I had the money, it sounds like I'd be living a nice, luxurious life. And, you know, I could probably make that happen with ease, you know, just have my private jet fly me from gig to gig, you know, relax on the beach in the meantime.
You could bring the audience on the jet with you.
But if you ask me to repeat it like next year, I'd say go to hell. it's something that you don't really want to do twice unless you do it completely differently the next time, I guess.
Was there a consecutive night in a row comedy streak before that?
Nobody's ever made an official one before, but there was a guy named Hal Sparks who says in his blog that he once did 2 years in a row, so I kind of just went off of that.
Interesting. Was there ever a point or where it was like, wow, I just don't want to do this next day? Was there ever a point where you came close to stopping it?
Oh, yeah. There's been a lot of times like that where I'm just, you know, almost every night sometimes. I'm just like, oh, God, really? Comedy again?
Yeah.
But I just kind of got to force myself to go through it, you know. There's been some nights when I've been sick, you know, I've had the flu. That was rough. Or just like really depressed and tired. Or just have been traveling all day. Like, those nights suck. But end of the day, I pick it up. Go there, tell some jokes, and usually I feel better afterwards anyway. So,
yeah. So, how's this? I imagine this has got to be sort of difficult on your personal life. Did you have like a girl? Do you have a girlfriend now, wife, or anything like that? Or do you have to deal with any of that on your 1,000 days?
Yeah, I don't know if someone with a wife would be able to do this. I had a girlfriend for the first 2/3 of the streak. And it was really, it's really taxing on a relationship. Dates are sacrificed and free time is kind of out the window and like all the traveling and commitments and just constantly having to be on the go. And so I think it really put a strain on our relationship. There was other things like other personal issues and stuff that were kind of issue, but I think, you know, the streak is really what, kind of made things fall apart and we broke up. And that was really rough because, you know, you go through a breakup and then you still have to go out every night and get on stage and make people laugh.
Yeah.
So that was like a kind of a rough patch to get over. So.
And how is that for your material? Cause for me, like I was in a relationship for like 6 years and then I broke up with my girlfriend in like March. And then I started doing stand up and I was like, holy shit, I got to change like half my act now or just lie, you know?
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, there's easy changes. Like you change my girlfriend to my ex-girlfriend or my, you know, I was with this girl who used to or something like that. But at the same time, it like opens doors to write new material, you know, from whatever suffering you're going through. However, at the time, I think sometimes when it's fresh, whatever your material you're coming up with is probably too depressing and you end up throwing it away later. So you kind of got to wait. You got to wait till you kind of heal and then you get better perspective and then your material becomes a little brighter and more on the spot. It does change the stuff you have. Fortunately, I didn't have a lot of like, my girlfriend this, my girlfriend that. It was just stuff that can kind of translate to any situation.
Right. It's weird, though. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything big. Like, for me, I had a whole chunk about, you know, dog stuff. And, like, I basically had to change.
Yeah.
I had to change. So I got this dog and blah, 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 to I used to have this dog and now I don't. And then the audience has to go, aw. And then I have to try and do the joke now. It's like, oh, shit.
You could lie. They don't know you, Vince.
Totally. I mean, your comedy is so dependent on your life. And when, like, one big thing in your life changes, it's like, you go, who the hell am I? You can't even go on stage and do that set anymore because you're like, what does this even mean, you know?
Yeah.
So big life changes like that, you know, they take a while to really shed your old skin and kind of, you know, find your new voice, I guess.
Well, and over the length that you've been doing it, I'm sure there's other life changes just that are natural to happen, whether it's with yourself or with family or friends. I mean, like, have you had to skip out on weddings or, you know, things like that? Because where it's, you know, there's just other life events. Have you sort of tried to plan some of your comedy around other things?
I've had to miss a few events. As far as weddings go, I've made most of the weddings, but only because I asked my friends if I could perform there. So I emceed my best friend's wedding in New York, and I just did two of my buddies' weddings, one in SF and one in Fresno the last month. And then one of my friends wasn't able to put me on his wedding, but I was able to go to the first half and then just ditch out and go do a gig. So I missed the latter half. That was like 2 years ago. It really just depends on where I am, if I can make something or if make fun of something. But I do a lot of like leaving early and coming late to stuff. So I have missed a lot of functions, but people are pretty much understanding of it.
Well, yeah, 900 plus shows in, I would hope so. So 949 shows. And what's the one that sticks out as like, wow, that was the best one out of these 949?
Well, I wouldn't say there was a best one, but there was I guess there was one really memorable experience. It was day 441. I was in St. Louis when I auditioned for America's Got Talent in front of 3,000 people in St. Louis, where I'd never been before. And I got a standing ovation, and Howard Stern was like, you know, I think you made the right career choice. I think, you know, you got some really funny stuff there. He kind of validated my career.
That's awesome.
Which was pretty cool. It was a very, you know, actualizing feeling. So how
often, I mean, I imagine when you're going every night for 1,000 days, like, okay, how long does it take you to get really tired of certain material? And like, how often are you going through stuff?
Well, there's stuff that I've been using since the beginning of the streak. I mean, there's jokes that I still tell that I had before I even started it. But as far as like a joke life cycle goes, it just really depends on the joke and if it's evolving and how often I use it. But I mean, generally it goes like, you know, you start messing around with the joke, it's working, and then you make it really good, and then it's killing, and then you love it, you're in love with it for like, you know, a few months. And then after a while, it kind of loses its luster, and you're like, what happened to that joke? You know, it used to be so amazing to me. What, you're a piece of shit now.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, maybe I just, I'm not treating it like I did when I first met it. And then you kind of rediscover it, and you realize, oh, okay, you know, I got to be nice to it. And then it'll go through another period where you're like, this joke sucks. So it's kind of like a joke, you know, it goes ups and downs depending on how you're feeling and stuff. But like, I like to keep constantly be writing. I mean, unfortunately in these last, you know, maybe 6 months, I've hit like a major, like a long-term writing slump, like one I've never hit before. So I've come up with a lot of newer stuff with this small little patchy jokes, like really short things that don't really tie together with one another. Whereas like last year I was cranking out, you know, some big bits and stuff that all flowed really well into my set. So it's kind of like the ups and downs of a comedian, you know, can really affect how your writing goes. But I definitely like to be generating new stuff as often as I can.
Yeah. I always wonder with the old, you know, when stuff kills and then it stops working, like is it the chicken or the egg sort of thing, where did this joke stop working because I'm just sick of it, or am I sick of it because it's not as timely and interesting as it once was?
Totally. It's definitely a little bit of both, for sure.
So now that the streak, we're getting, I mean, you got about a couple months left. What are you looking forward to the most when you don't have to perform every night?
What do I look forward to the most?
Yeah.
Really, like, I just want to be able to not feel like I am obligated to be somewhere. That feeling that, like, oh, shit, I got to be doing something later today.
Every single day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, that feeling of obligation. And then I like to be outdoors in the evening time. It's like always the nicest time of day for me. I like to go for walks. I like to go for hikes. I like to exercise at that time of day. But it's very challenging to do that with comedy. Like you either, you know, it's very rare that I get to go out in the evening and kind of just enjoy the evening. I don't even really care about going out and hanging out with friends. Like I can still do that right now. But like the idea of a complete vacation where I don't have to think about comedy or perform or be obligated to anything, and I can just relax fully without that adrenaline rush every night, I'm really looking forward to that.
So what's the book going to be called?
I'm not exactly sure yet. I'm kind of off. This whole thing's going under two names, either A Thousand Days of Comedy or 1001 Nights of Comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the book is going to be called exactly. I kind of got to figure that out eventually.
What's the weirdest place that you performed since you started?
There's been a lot of weird places, but I guess I did a yoga studio. I did a bowling alley.
Wow.
I performed outside on a street in Oakland a few weeks ago. I guess the locations, there's been some kind of weird locations, but more weird situations, like the night I had to bum rush an Irish bar in San Francisco to get them to put me up. I basically bum rushed the karaoke show and stole the mic and started telling jokes to the Irish people in the bar, and one guy came up and he punched me, and he threw the mic on the ground.
Did not that like your jokes, huh? Did not pretty, like the Irish jokes that night.
Yeah, he was not. The Irish like their karaoke. Don't get in the way between an Irishman and the karaoke.
He was not interested in defying stereotypes that night.
No, not at all. So I at least I got my set in. So that worked out.
Streak continues.
Yeah.
Black
yeah,
eye and
that
all.
That was a pretty memorable experience, you could say.
Any other weirdness? I mean, I imagine like that kind of, there's got to be so many weird nights.
Yeah, over three years, basically.
Yeah, there's been a lot of really weird nights. It's just like, it's all a blur. But I've been heckled really bad. I've been told that I'm not funny. You know, one guy told me that I was the worst comedian he's ever seen. And this was like, you know, 700 days in. It was pretty sad.
you gotta be
sad
like,
when you do 700 days of comedy in a row, some guy tells you you're the worst comedian he's ever seen in his life.
Yeah, but 700 days in, you gotta be like carved out of stone at this point, right? I mean, what can anything phase you at this point?
I mean, it was just, it was a bad open mic, and I was kind of talking to the crowd, and you know, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, another night you go and people are like, oh my god, you're the best comedian I've ever seen. But you know, it's all subjective. Comedy is just, it's just all in the eye of the beholder, really. I mean, I've traveled around a lot. I did some gigs in Hawaii. That was fun. And I've done a lot of really weird college gigs where it's like they don't really understand how to respond to the comedy, I guess.
Like they think they can just sort of talk in the background as if it's a music show?
Yeah. Oh, music shows are the worst. I've done intermission acts for music shows. I've done mixed poetry shows, which are actually pretty good. I've done charity events where people don't pay attention to the person on stage. So many places, but I mean, every night something weird happens, really. It's just, comedy tends to attract really weird people and situations in general. I think that's what it is.
How clean are you and how much, you know, what gigs, like when you're going to a yoga studio or like something like a charity event or a wedding, obviously, how much do you have to censor that in a way that's uncomfortable?
Yeah, I have a lot of clean material. I probably have an hour of clean stuff. done a lot of clean gigs. And then I have an hour of more edgier stuff, and I definitely have a solid 30-20 minutes that's just filthy. That would get me unbooked from every clean gig that I've ever done if they heard it. And, you know, I kind of just be selective. I kind of just base my off of my judgment of what the crowd looks like, what I think they can take, and I just kind of go from there. You know, as a comedian, you're very discriminatory. You kind of look at a crowd and get your impression based off that. Sometimes you can misjudge, but, you know, usually as time goes on, your judgment becomes more and more accurate.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's funny, all the just stereotyping and, like, all the subconscious stereotyping and stuff that you're probably not even aware of. You're just sort of, you know, feeling out what the vibe of the room seems like.
Yeah.
Was there ever a time where it was close, even out of your control, where like you almost, it was like, shit, I got to go find somewhere to perform. And it was, you know, it was like, I almost didn't make it this one day, like show three.
Yeah. There's been a few of those, like in San Francisco, and I had a bum rush a bar in the inner Richmond, and just be like, hey man, can you put me up? And like, St. Patty's Day was the worst. It was like 11:30, and there was like half an hour on the clock. And I went back to that Irish bar where I got punched, and I'm like, I looked in there, and there was like 30 more times Irish people as there were that one night that I got punched. I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I walked away. I went to this bar, and I was like, I begged the owner. I was like, please just put me up. And he turned off the music, and he put me up, and like the people were there just partying all night, and they're just kind of weird about it. But eventually, I got him on board. You know, that happened. One night I was flying back from the East Coast, and I barely made my set in Irvine by like a minute because the flight was delayed. One time I was flying back from New York, and I was on standby, and they kept delaying my flight. So I just ran over to a random kiosk and hopped on a flight to LA, and then flew to LA and made a set just in time. So there's been a lot of close calls like that.
I would think those make for, maybe whether it's the book or the documentary, though, those sort of unexpected moments might make for the most fun for other people to see. It might not have been the most fun for you, but at the time. But even looking back, maybe I don't know. Was it stuff that looking back, it's like, wow, you know, this. It sort of made me do these things that I've, maybe it took you out of your comfort zone, or, you know, made you go to LA for different things that, you know, sort of forced you to do things that ended up being, looking back, pretty interesting or different.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's totally what it was. So, you know, we've got a couple of those moments on the documentary, so that's been really cool. You know, and then there's a lot of really, really crappy gigs. Like I hosted a wedding. I hosted an Indian wedding here in L.A. A few months ago, and like nobody was listening. It was just we just got you know, shots of me just kind of like talking to people who are not paying attention. So all, you know, we get all sorts of bad, really, really bad footage, and then some good shows as well.
Have you had
it all kind of balances out?
Have you had the documentary or some sort of someone filming you the whole time?
No, not the whole time. We started in the middle. I didn't really get the idea. I mean, because I didn't even know what I was doing really in the beginning.
Oh, did, was
and
it?
And then people were like, "You should document this. You should make something out of it." So that's when I started.
When you started, was it a goal of I'm going to do 1,000 in a row?
No, not at all. So, I was just like, I got to perform as much as I can. I want to get better. And then I realized that I'd done a bunch of days in a row, and I was like, I should just keep going. And then it became 100, and then it became 365, and then it became 1,000.
Wow. Oh, so it was sort of, those were the milestones. It was 100. You're like, oh shit, I've done 100 in a row. And then you did a year in a row.
Much.
And then it's like, well, I might as well do 1,000 in a row.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
Interesting. That's a crazy progression from 3 months to 3 years.
Yeah.
Just slips
yeah,
by.
Yeah, it is.
So what?
That's pretty much how it happened.
So you said working on a movie, working on a book. You know, what's next after day 1,000?
Well, I, you know, the movie, the book, those things should come out probably next year. I'm going to take a short vacation. I'm probably going to go to Hawaii for a week in vacation. But then I, 10 days after it ends, I have to start this massive college tour. So I'm basically back on the go right when I get back.
So, I mean, has this led to a lot more opportunities then?
Absolutely. A lot of people have heard about it, and they've I've gotten a lot of press, and, you know, people who hear about it, it's gotten me a lot of bookings because it's like, oh, this guy's a hard worker, you know?
He's done 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
He'll show up. He'll be here.
Exactly. This guy can't miss it. This guy can't miss our show.
He's done 1,000 in a row. Yeah, he'll be here. We got at least got a guy. I'll fly this guy.
Yeah, right.
All right, man. So where can we follow the journey in the meantime?
On my website, sammyko.com, sammyko.com. I have my blog. I blog every day about either what happened or like some tidbits in comedy. I'll give advice to a lot of starting comedians and also just talk about random stuff that's going on in my life. And then you follow me on Twitter, at Sammy Obeid, SammyObeid, or Facebook, same thing, and Instagram, where I post a picture of me on stage every day.
Are you gonna have like a time lapse picture of yourself, like those old?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah. Get that going.
So where are you performing tonight? I mean, this isn't live, but I'm just curious where you are, where you're performing tonight.
Yeah, I'm in LA right now. I'm about to go do a show at a Persian restaurant in Beverly Hills, and then I'm doing this show called Comedy Juice at the Hollywood Improv at 10.
Oh, nice. Is that Mark Saratella's show?
Yeah, it's Mark Saratella, yeah.
Nice.
Dropping names.
Well, he's doing the show at Cobb's on the 4th, so.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. So, double plug. How about that?
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a DP.
All right. Well, yeah. Cool, man. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Yeah, and best of success.
Oh, thanks.
Best of success for the final 51.
Yeah, we're on it, guys. We're on it. We're almost there.
On the home stretch. God, double digits had to be a relief.
Yes, exactly.
Well, good luck, congrats on getting this far.
Thanks
enjoy 1,000.
Thanks a lot, guys. It was a pleasure doing this, and we'll definitely... keep in touch.
Yeah,
we'll get you on when you're done. See how relieved you feel.
And then Vince is going to start Vince is going to do 1,001. So
not going to happen ever. Never.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, man. Good luck with the rest.
All right, guys. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, thanks.
All right.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks, Sammy, for coming on. We couldn't figure out the double bloop, so we did get Brett back. Brett.
I don't even care.
Oh, Brett.
Yeah, but that's your role, isn't the guy who doesn't care.
I have a role?
Yeah. That's the character you play, the misanthropic,
not
hater.
Caring guy.
Hey, I just like to draw squirrels. I don't really like people as much as I like to draw squirrels. Sometimes drawing squirrels is a bit of an escape from, having to see people and the problems in the real world and so on. So.
It's summertime, so it's got to be coming up on Squirrel Fest. Did it already happen, or when is Squirrel Fest?
Oh, no, sure. Squirrel Fest, it kind of coincides with the music festivals. Middle of August. I mean, there's a couple of Squirrel Fests. There's Squirrel Fest New York, Squirrel Fest Montana. We got a Squirrel Fest in Denmark, actually.
Wow, it's going international.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, this has grown a lot. I mean, at one point it was just... one Squirrel Fest, right?
To see how it's grown from the early days, I mean, it makes my heart proud, you know? Just to see other people that get the same excitement out of drawing squirrels as I do, and just to see how much better the way they draw the fur and the whiskers is.
Has it improved significantly since first Squirrel Fest 1?
Well, you know, they say practice makes perfect, and, you know, drawing squirrels no different, you know what I mean?
I do. Have you traveled to any of these international festivals?
Oh, yeah, sure. I've been to, Squirrel Fest Ontario. That's a big one.
And are there different squirrels in Canada?
Well, yeah, there's different species of squirrels in different places. And obviously, I don't have much respect for the people that try to draw squirrels that aren't from that region. I don't think it's right.
Well, because then they're drawing. They're just drawing from an image or memory, right?
You could be drawn from a picture. It's just, it's not a legitimate way to draw squirrels.
You need to do it with a live squirrel right there.
Oh, sure. Otherwise, it's against the whole idea of the whole thing.
I mean, it goes against the covenant of squirrel drawing.
Everything I stand for.
From start to finish.
Sure.
So have you discovered any new ones, any new squirrels that you didn't even know existed?
I've discovered 5 new species of squirrels.
Wow, that's a lot.
I have a tattooed on my leg. Actually, it's a leg sleeve that I have.
But it says every species of squirrel that you've seen.
Well, the hardest part was trusting someone else to draw the squirrels besides me, especially when I was going to be permanent.
But you drew what was going to be the tattoo.
Oh, yeah, sure. I drew it from him, and then he had to, I obviously can't tattoo myself. So he had to take over that part of it.
Yeah. That takes a lot of trust on your part.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But I hope you found, met someone at Squirrel Fest that at least is also a tattoo artist.
I met Roger and Butch, and they were all tattoo artists. It took, we had to build the rapport first, obviously.
Yeah, well, and of course.
Once I saw that he cared about squirrels as much as I did, it was, a little bit easier to really let go.
Yeah, you weren't as anxious and nervous about it.
Right.
Yeah. So what's your favorite new species?
The crested brown squirrel from the highlands of Scotland, actually. There aren't too many trees there, so it's actually a ground squirrel.
Is there ever a time when
they collect rocks?
When you're so excited to see one that it takes you a minute and you can't even get started drawing yet?
Oh, sure. Sometimes you drop your charcoal and... if you're in a rainy or dirty environment, sometimes you might have to get a whole new charcoal and start all over again.
We just talked to Sammy, he's about to do 1,000 days of comedy in a row. What do you think about doing 1,000 days of squirrel drawing in a row?
It seems really exhausting. I like to put a lot of energy into each and every one, and I don't think that I could do that. I never want drawing squirrels to become a job.
Because if you love what you do,
you never work a day in your life, for sure.
Wow. All right. Well, Fake Fred, thanks for stopping by.
Oh, man. Yeah, sure. I got to go. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. Well, we'll see you maybe at Squirrel Fest Denmark.
I'm just going to wander out in the hallway here for a while.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right. Brett? Real Brett?
Hi.
Hey. Real Brett, what do you think about Fake Brett? Why do you not enjoy Fake Brett as much as the rest of the world?
Who said that? I didn't. I enjoy Fake Brett.
Okay. Just mild enjoyment?
Yeah. No, I think you guys do a good job. You got a special thing going there.
Oh, sure. I like that, hearkening back to the very open of this broadcast where Mexican Brett are broken into a Fake Brett. Couldn't even help it, Vince, could you?
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know who those people
are.
Oh,
you were gone. That's right. You were gone for a while.
Yeah, I was gone. I step out whenever Fake Brett shows up.
You two don't get along.
No. I don't like him. I don't like the way he smells. I don't like the way he looks.
He does have a unique odor.
Yeah.
I think it's squirrel urine.
I think it's the flannel, that really catches the odors.
I think with squirrel urine, if you wear squirrel urine, you can get closer to the squirrels. Do we get to all the emails? We got some good ones this week.
I think we got... to just about all of them. I have one more.
All right, maybe one more. Brett, anything
one more, yeah.
Anything we're missing from New York?
The salsa here is terrible.
Oh well, that's because it's all paste picante.
All of it, all the salsa. I think what's happened, if I would be permitted some conjecture here, is that salsa is treated the same way as ketchup is in all the other cities in the world. In that it's just Heinz in a packet. Mm. I think there's somewhere in Jersey that is like a hot spring, like it's like a geothermal vent, but just for shitty cough syrup looking salsa, and it bubbles up, and there's a bunch of Teamsters, and they scoop it up with their hands, and they either throw it in a dumpster, or they just put it in the pockets of their shirt and pants, and then drive the 2 hours. Across the bridge in traffic to New York, and then pull it out of their now stained pockets and put it in the little clear plastic cups or the dumpster, I think they helicoptered the dumpster over and then just tilted out onto the streets. And then someone has to go with the little clear plastic cups and just scoop it off the streets. And then you can put it in your burrito.
So what you've heard the similar.
What you're saying is you're not a fan of the salsa.
Is that what we're getting at? It's more disturbing in how consistent it is in the ways that it is shitty than the fact that it is shitty to begin with.
How's the Mexican food minus the salsa?
I got some carnitas that weren't shredded.
What is it? How does that even work?
They were like chopped with a butcher's knife.
They were little rectangles, little cubic rectangles.
Little chunks of carnitas.
Well, I don't know if it even counts if you don't pull it apart.
So it's just pork.
It was braised pork chopped up with a knife.
Chopped up like a douche, another roner in the night.
Got it, man.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a similar theory about Chinese food in New York, where there's just a big vat underneath the city that has all the same stuff, and each Chinese restaurant just has a tube that shoots it up to their. Because every Chinese food place has the exact same menu and the food looks and tastes like almost the exact same. You're like, what the hell is going on here?
General Tso's.
Yeah.
They have Kung Pao, chow mein, fried rice.
Walnut, prawns. Well, they always have a huge menu, which is weird because, I mean, obviously it's just the same ingredients configured in 100 million different ways.
Well, yeah, and it's always weird to me that who's ordering one of these 1,000 things? It's like,
yeah.
You probably sell 98% of what you sell are these 20 items. Just make them really good. You don't need these 4,000 items.
Well, the problem is it's when you call it Chinese food, there's a billion people there, and the country's enormous. So it's been around for a million years. A lot of different types of food that come. Like, maybe you need to focus on, like, one city. Like, here's some Hong Kong food.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
All right. Last question. This one is from Andrew Mark Tim. Hello, Frotmasters. So there have been a couple of times where I've been in the drive-thru line at Tim Hortons, and it happens that the person in front of me paid for my order. There have been times where that shit happened for hours in the drive-thru. I've never paid for the order of the person behind me when I've learned that my order was paid for. The way I see it, why should I? It seems to me that the only motivation I have to pay for the order of the person behind me is the social pressure over the idea of being the one to go against the group and stop the chain of paying for orders. I don't know the person behind me. I have no vested interest with them. I'll gain nothing by being nice and buying them their damn coffee. Anyway, I was wondering what you all felt about my position. Is my refusal to keep the chain going reasonable, or am I one of those people ripping apart the fabric of our society?
I think
Tim
Horton.
It's some fast food place. Brett, I think you should start.
What the fuck is a Bobby Horton?
It's a Tim Horton, first of all. We don't know. It's some restaurant where that you can drive through and order.
I don't think you should be going to that restaurant.
Okay.
I've never heard of it. I can't vouch for it. I don't think anyone should be buying anything from there.
What if they have really good salsa?
In your coffee?
Wait, it's just a coffee place? I missed that part.
Tim Hortons Incorporated is a Canadian fast casual restaurant known for its coffee and donuts. It is also Canada's largest fast food service with over 3,000 stores nationwide.
Oh, it's Canadian. That's what we don't know
about it. It was founded in 1964 in Hamilton, Ontario by Canadian hockey player Tim Horton and Jim Sherrade after initial venture in hamburger restaurants.
All right.
In 1967, Horton partnered with investor Ron Joyce, who assumed control over operations after Tim Horton died in 1974. And expanded the chain into a multi-million-dollar franchise.
You can stop.
Yeah, you could have stopped earlier.
It's bigger than McDonald's in Canada.
Wow. So, Brett, that's it? You just say don't go there?
Is that just a Canadian thing? Where you just buy each other meals? That's adorable.
Yeah, I've never heard of that either.
Hey, thanks,
It is really cute.
Thanks, eh?
But, like, what if you go there and you want to order a small fry... And then the guy behind you is catering an entire lunch.
We're not in any way qualified to comment on this because we have no concept of what it's like not to try and fuck over both the person in front and behind of you in the drive-thru.
Yeah.
This is a uniquely Canadian thing, and I don't think we want to get involved lest we suddenly start becoming nice people.
Yeah, because my entire reason to not do it would be the
Judaism.
Is my Judaism. And I would just think instantly,
come on, you gotta just, like,
I got a free ass meal.
Yeah.
That's what No, it'd be like there's a 500-pound dude behind me that
well,
is
see,
ordered.
The thing about Ben is he lacks both empathy and shame, so I don't think he's really your go-to for this one.
All right, well then,
bad point, man.
All right, well then, Vince is left.
I don't know. That's a tough one. Like, I honestly, I definitely would feel the social pressure if someone bought me my food. I would certainly feel the pressure to buy it for the person behind me. But I don't know if it's wrong to not want to do that because, like I said, what if you get a fry and they got like a whole catered meal? It see, the whole thing seems confusing. I feel like there's much better ways to be nice to people than buy a random person's food who clearly had the money to get the fast food in the first place.
Well, and you'll never, since you're in your car, you'll never interact with at all.
Oh, you guys are terrible people.
It kind of seems...
Brett, you just told them to not even go there.
Brett, it kind of seems like...
he's a Canadian and I don't trust them.
It kind of seems like instead of buying like a needy person meal, it's just like two middle class people buying each other beers that both cost the same price. So it's like you're sort of giving yourself peace of mind like you just did something really nice when really you did nothing at all.
See, you're saying that, but what you really mean is you don't ever want to buy anyone a meal because it's not like you're like, oh, thanks, bro. I'm going to go immediately recontribute to the plight of the homeless because you won't do that. You're using a very well-reasoned argument to argue in favor of you never having to do anything inconvenient.
No, it's not. I don't think it would be inconvenient to pay for the person behind you. It's just sort of confusing. Like I mean, like I said, I think I would probably do it if I had my food paid for me, but like being strong-armed into it is a little odd. Feeling like you're strong-armed into
it. I also know what you mean where someone paid for yours and then you paid for someone else and you'd be like, man, I did a really good thing
today.
Yeah,
right? You're like, what? No, not really.
I just bought someone a donut and coffee instead of paying for my own.
I gave this guy $5 and then I expected his friend to give me $5. Aren't I great?
Yeah, guys.
Why are you assuming that the guy in front of you expects you to pass it on? You're shitting on his last dying wish.
No, because he said this happens like in chains, like where
he said this goes on for hours at a time.
Yeah, where people are always paying for someone else.
What the fuck is going on in Canada?
It's a weird place, man.
They have drive-through donut and coffee, and you pay for the person behind you. What, Brett?
That's really weird. That's really weird.
They're all wearing crowns of squirrel bones.
And you have to apologize when you pull up to the window. You're just like,
sorry, eh?
Sorry. It's really sorry.
It's funny how weird societal differences manifest themselves. Like, what's his name? Fucking comedian. Doug Stanhope has a bit about being in England and how they're all like, they all just go out and beat the shit out of each other and how that is much more easy to happen in a country that has like socialized medicine where you go and like break a guy's nose. Like you go and you might get your nose broken, but at least you know you're not going to be like a grand or two in debt after the fucking ambulance ride.
Yeah, you just show up to the hospital and say, hey, please fix this.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Grand or two after a hospital ride. I don't know.
Yeah.
What sort of...
More.
No, it's a grand or... It's like 1,300 taking ambulance.
I was going to say a lot more than that.
Yeah. And then he's telling some other story about how they had to have like a sign in these bars to tell people to stop prank calling ambulance drivers to beat the shit out of the ambulance driver. Because I guess they would just like drunk guys would just prank call the ambulance and then beat up the driver when he came.
Man, that's a mean thing to do to
it. It's pretty amazing. It's like the most amazing trolling thing.
Yeah, it's beyond trolling.
Yeah.
That's
IRL trolling.
Yeah, that's a
face to face.
Yeah. It's a whole nother level.
Yeah.
Well, I think consensus is, of course, as a Jew, I respectfully decline. In all honesty, I would probably ask what the order behind me is and then decide.
Yeah.
Well, because if I just got a coffee and a donut and behind me is like $25, I don't want to pay $25 for a coffee and a donut. That's not fair.
How about you apply the amount of money that my order cost to the person behind me? That's
deal.
How much I want to pay.
Deal.
Ben places an order and then pulls up to the window and immediately asks, "What's in it for me?"
No, it's more like I don't want to pay more for the stuff I just ordered.
Oh, we get it.
Oh. Whoa, we get it.
Yeah. All right, you guys want to. You guys want to give this one a blanket?
Yeah, it was a good one. Let's tuck it in.
Yeah, I like
that. Let's kiss it goodnight.
Did you guys feel good about that?
I felt really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got good emails. Vince, this time next week, We're on a plane to Chicago.
Holy shit, I forgot about that. What time is our flight?
Flight's at 4 p.m.
Whew.
Land late at night in Chicago, and then Thursday morning, RV time, off to the gathering.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah, you guys,
Are you guys going to pod from there?
Yeah, well, maybe it won't be live, but yeah, we gotta record a pod.
I'm hoping they'll have internet access. Like, I mean, I'm planning to do updates and stuff for...
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out. Brett, we'll let you know. If you get a text from us, it means we're alive. Well, thanks for everyone for supporting that. We'll do one more Fraudcast before that. We'll get that on next Tuesday, so we have an early one. Emails, fraudcast@gmail.com. Have you been checking the voicemail?
Yeah, we didn't get any voicemails this week. What's up? We got a lot of emails, though. So I good guess people are too. Just, they don't like their voice or something.
Good emails.
415-275-0030. We like to hear your voices.
Yeah. Nice. Voicemail us.
Yeah.
And Brett.
Yes.
Do you want to take us on out of here?
Yeah. Did you already give the number?
Yeah, we did. Were you listening?
No, I tune out. Well done. You guys are terrible to listen to.
Well done.
Good night and good gins.
Yeah.